As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Spin Right, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Right, the Athletics Blue Jays, Toronto Blue Jays podcast, I should add. My name is Drew Fairservice, and I am joined, as always, by Athletic Blue Jays journalist, writer, reporter, Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm very good.
I'm glad to hear that you are very good. I want you to know that I'm not here to make friends. So I am here for you and I to really throw down. Talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, talking about Survivor, whatever comes up. We've just had an extensive off-camera, off-recording discussion about Survivor as Caitlin has brought me up to speed. A show that's probably older than she is, but...
No. I was alive. I was alive when the first season came out. I want to say it was like nine or 10, maybe. I'd have to look at the year it came out, but I think it was around then.
I bet you were younger. It's alarming. Shout out Richard Hatch. I don't know if he's probably been canceled. Didn't he go to jail or got arrested for, he didn't pay taxes on his money that he won. Whatever. Let us move on. I got to stop screwing with this thing. Let's move on from Survivor, talk about your Toronto Blue Jays. But before we do that, I want to encourage everyone to make sure that if you want to read what Caitlin writes about the Blue Jays, not about Survivor. That's what she does in her Tumblr, on her live journal back in the day. If you want to read about what Caitlin writes on The Athletic about the Blue Jays, you want to read what everybody writes with the trade deadline coming up, with draft coming up, so much going on, you're going to want to go to theathletic.com/spinrate. We'll give you a tidy little deal for the year. You can get hooked up with all that good Athletic content goodness. Also, you get to listen to this show ad-free. If you listen to it through the Athletic app and you're a subscriber, you can subscribe to the show whether or not you are an Athletic subscriber, though. You can listen to this show. You can go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to go, get that good Blue Jays coverage that we love to bring to you. Had a great chat earlier this week. We do two shows a week. I don't know if you knew that or not. If this is your first time, welcome. Thanks for giving us a shot. We do two shows a week. On The Athletic, I chatted with Scott MacArthur of The Fan during this week about the Blue Jays, about the bullpen, and we also talked about pride and about rainbow washing. We had a really good chat with Scott. It's always good to chat with him, but that's a great example of the shows we do during the week where it's me and a guest, and then here on the weekends, Caitlin and I get up to speed on what is going on in Blue Jays land. This weekend, when we find the Blue Jays, they have just come ever so close to sweeping the dreaded Tampa Bay Rays, but they only were able to take 2 of 3. They ended a nice little homestand, which, of course, had some not ideal outcomes against the Mariners. Played well against, the Marlins last week? God, the time, it never stops. But There's a lot to unpack right now in Blue Jays land. We've got all-star stuff that's happening. Blue Jays are sending 4.
Yeah, count them. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Count them. 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is getting the start. Marcus Semien is getting the start for the American League. Teoscar Hernandez, against all odds out there, starting.
Vibe
for the American League All Stars.
He's the vibe starter.
He's there to bring the All Star vibes. Good for Teoscar Hernandez, man. It's a great story. I mean, he's having a good season. Not quite as good as maybe 2020, but still hitting really well. Still a really valuable contributor to one of the best offenses in baseball. And of course, yeah, he brings the vibes. He's going to make sure everybody is having a good time. He's going to vibe check the whole world. Come color. Maybe he'll hit in the home run derby. Then he can have the opportunity to lose to Shohei Ohtani, like so many of us. And then today here, Sunday, when we're recording, it was announced that Bo Bichette was named as a reserve for the American League All-Star. And also, future Blue Jay Joey Gallo, also named to the American League All-Star reserve. And also future Blue Jay Craig Kimbrell. Lots of Blue Jays. Blue Jays representatives all over the place. I mean, there's not too much to say about the All-Star. I mean, four might seem like a lot for a team that's in third place, but also a team that has the fifth best run differential in all of baseball. I believe they're the second best run differential in the American League. You know, a lot of really good position players that are shoving this Blue Jays team along. And nice to see some good seasons, one great season, two great seasons, two very good seasons being rewarded here in the Midsummer Classic.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of really good on the fan base. You consider like the three starters who were voted in are obviously voted by the fans. And you mentioned that Teoscar Hernandez got that sort of last minute voting surge there. But I think it's pretty good to see the Toronto fans and Canadian fans probably come out so strongly for a team that really they have not seen since 2019. You know, I've always kind of wondered and I've written about it a little bit and I've asked around, like, you know, are fans kind of missing the team? Of course, they're missing the team, but do they feel less connected to the team? Have they lost somewhat of some interest? But it really doesn't seem that way. I mean, obviously Vlad was going to get in, and I think more than just Blue Jays fans were voting for him because of the season that he was having and he was so deserving. But obviously when you see a guy like Teoscar get in for that kind of last surge and how much the Toronto Blue Jays were kind of pushing it, definitely the fan base is to thank for that. And we've seen that in the past. The Blue Jays fans have been really, strong voters. I remember a couple years back, just getting Justin Smoke in the All-Star game was kind of a big deal. That must have been a season where they weren't having a great season. Was it 2019? I don't even remember when it was. 2018 maybe. Anyway, whenever it was, there was a big push to get Justin Smoke into the All-Star game. And so they've definitely been good voters. But yeah, it's nice to see four position players in the game. Kind of funny. Like, you look at the Blue Jays have four, Oakland A's have one. I mean,
maybe you should have some fans.
Yeah.
How's that grab you? Maybe don't make them come and watch your games in the side of an actual toilet bowl. It's a shame. I mean, it is. I've been thinking about the Rays, as I often do. The Blue Jays, of course, took two of three from the Rays, but the Rays are still ahead of the Blue Jays in the standings. Only, I think, maybe, what are they, 3.5 games ahead of the Blue Jays at this point. The Rays are the one thing I will give them credit for, and this is, get ready, this is like among the, this feels like one of the biggest backhanded compliments of all time. It's on its way down the pike here. The Rays don't have any good players, right? Like, you look at their numbers, you look at the way that they performed. The Rays don't, like,
position players?
Trash. All of them, one after another. Just unbelievable trash. They don't have anybody who's, like, putting up big numbers. They have good, they're obviously a team that has prized, what's the word I'm looking for, that has prized run prevention, something that ranks slightly ahead. Andy McCullough wrote a really good story in the Rays for the Athletic a few weeks back. If you haven't read that, I would encourage you to go do it. But like, Mike Zunino is the top, you know, Ray by wins above replacement at two here at the halfway, just short of the halfway point of the season.
All-star Mike Zunino.
All-star Mike Zunino. You know, Joey Wendell's having a nice season, but like, is he even going to put up a 4-win year? Austin Meadows is a good player, but like they don't have any good players, but they're a good team. And that is, you know, a lot of ways sort of the model that, not the model, but the way that people sort of get all excited, like, oh, this is what baseball is all supposed to be about. It's a team game. And if you want it bad enough and you play the right, you can win. And while I obviously will spend a lot of time looking down my nose at that, the Rays are credit to that and finding a way to develop a winner. But like at the same time, it's just like last year when they were marketing the postseason and they put out that sizzle reel video and it's got Fernando Tatis Jr. flipping his bat into outer space and Ronald Acuna and Vlad Guerrero Jr. and all these players. And then there's like one shot of a Ray, like 55 seconds into this 1 minute and 15 second video, because that's just not their model. And that's probably the way they like it. All-stars are expensive. They probably cost you more money. When it comes time to pay for them. And some guys might have an elevator in their contract for being an all-star, whatever it might be. But so I do want to give them a bit of credit for making a good team out of like dog shit, about having no good players and yet still being, even like their relievers obviously are good players, not exactly going to light up the wins above replacement, chart, because they are guys that throw 20, 30, 40, innings so far in the season. Diego Castillo, Rays closer, who pitched today here on Sunday, who honest to God looks like he has no idea where the ball is going. Like just no clue. And he still gets people out. Good hitters. He got the meat of the Blue Jays order out, which is, not what you want. But, and maybe the A's are something similar to that. I mean, Mark Kenya is their kind of best player. He's hurt, isn't he?
Yeah, he's hurt.
So that makes it tough. But
yeah.
In any event, congratulations to those Blue Jays who are going to the All-Star game. Congratulations. Again, it'd be fun. Maybe Teoscar Hernandez hits in the home run derby. It's going to be the Shohei Ohtani weekend. I think everybody kind of gets that already. He playing in the home run derby, made the team, obviously voted on the team as a DH. And then today, of course, was added to the team as a pitcher. So made the team as a pitcher and as a position mm-hmm. player. Which I hope they let him do both straight up. I feel like it's going to be like fantasy baseball at the All-Star game where they'll be like, Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, is one like roster spot, and Shohei Ohtani, the position player, is another roster spot. So like he'll be in and out. It'll be like instructional league where he just like wanders onto the field when he wants to and everybody cheers. And so shout out to Shohei Ohtani, of course, in the American League. He's got 31 home runs so far. Vlad not leading the league in home runs anymore. Just can't keep the pace with that freak of nature. Place for the Angels, the other one. Now, Rays series takeaways. You got any? What was it? Was there something that stuck with you this weekend? Is there something that is on your mind? I know we talked a little bit about a player on the Blue Jays who didn't make the All-Star team, but who has pitched very well, Robbie Ray. I mean, I feel like, again, obviously congrats are in order, and Teoscar Hernandez is a deserving All-Star, but it would be a little dicey to have five Blue Jays, yeah. Joey Gallo notwithstanding, on the All-Star team. So maybe Robbie Ray sort of missed out where a guy like Hernandez would have made it in. But I don't know. There's obviously Robbie Ray just keeps rolling. It's ridiculous how well he's pitching.
Yeah, so big picture takeaways from the Ray series. I would say it's the Blue Jays sort of went into it circling this series. They knew it was a big series, and they wanted to come out of it with at least winning 2 of 3. And they did that. Obviously the ideal scenario is to sweep the Rays. That didn't happen. But the first two games they played really well. The Friday night was a blowout, played well. Saturday, it kind of, the final score was closer than it should have been, just because of, one hit in the ninth with Romano on, but whatever. And then today, Sunday's game was sort of the Blue Jays kind of playing that classic game against the Rays, where they just kind of make some defensive errors and they make some base running errors. And when you're playing a team like the Rays, and the margins can be really thin if you're not scoring a lot of runs. And for whatever reason, the Blue Jays have a really hard time against Ryan Yarbrough. And it's kind of insane, actually, if you look at sort of his numbers against other teams and then his numbers against the Blue Jays. It's like he's an ace against the Blue Jays and no one else. It's kind of incredible. I don't know what it is. It's something that's like up and down the lineup. Although I think Kevin Biggio is like the only guy that like has hit him fairly well, but not so in this game. But yeah, it's kind of a weird situation there. I guess it's just funny that can just happen. And of course the Rays and the Blue Jays play each other a lot. So the pitcher just has the upper hand in that regard. But anyway, yeah, the big takeaway is that I think it was a pretty fine series, all things considered. A sweep would have been better for them, but they gain a game on the Rays, essentially. And the Rays also look like not the team they were in May. They look more beatable. They kind of, they're like, their flaws are kind of being exposed right now. Some of that's because of injury. Like, they obviously don't have like Tyler Glasnow going for them, and they've had a lot of different pitcher injuries, but they're a team that strikes out a lot. You talked about they're a run prevention team, but you know, if they do have those games where their pitching isn't holding up, then they tend to be a team that doesn't score a ton of runs. And so, you know, they looked less Rays-like, less threatening to the Blue Jays this weekend. So I think, like, if you want like a big picture takeaway, that might be it. Like, it was not the disaster that we saw whatever it was, like a month ago or whatever, when they got swept in four games, and it was just one disaster after another. Like, one game was just worse than the other. So this was a better series from that point of view. I thought the Blue Jays played a lot better, outside of, you know, the Sunday's game where they looked a little bit sloppy. And that's the thing with the Jays. Like, I think that they're a team where they've almost put it all together at this point, but they still, to me, don't seem like a team that is completely firing on all cylinders completely consistently. Like, I do think they still have not played their absolute best baseball yet this year.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think that idea of run prevention is one that's kind of going to chase the Blue Jays around until they improve it, you know, frankly. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to be, it's always going to be a challenge. I know Stoughton was tweeting about this today, just talking about like where they are in terms of defensive runs saved and in terms of UZR, and then you can look at which of course are like sort of Iron Age or Bronze Age defensive statistics, and then you look at more of the outs above average on the Statcast, Baseball Savant. The Blue Jays actually, like, they rank pretty far down on those things. They don't really have a standout defender. This is something that we've been saying, and they don't have a standout defender unless, you know, your feelings on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first are notwithstanding, or what you think about Marcus Semien, who's obviously has adjusted to life on life at second base well, if not like maybe not spectacularly, but he's fine. He's the least of your concerns. Mm-hmm. But you're still sort of trying to figure things out. I mean, you've seen Kevin Biggio sort of playing a lot of different places, and never really seeing super comfortable. He played second yesterday, didn't he? And I think he maybe had a bit of a booted a ball a little bit, or just had a bit of a misplay. But again, it's tough because you're sending them all over the diamond, asking them to do a bunch of different things. And I mean, that's never really going to be his bread and butter, the ability to catch the baseball. As I should say, Marcus Semien is having a fine year at second base. He's five outs above average at second base, which is very good. But anyway, like, so defense is going to be a challenge for them. But like the Rays, you know, I'm trying desperately to decide if you can track the Rays kind of struggles recently to when they, decided that they were going to punish people who doctor the baseball And a lot of those rules came out and in place in around June 15th, at which time the Rays promptly went on a 7-game losing streak. So shrug. And then they've had another long losing streak after that. Run prevention is hard to do when the other team hits the ball over the fence, which the Blue Jays, you know, did in the early parts of this weekend. George Springer, of course, hit a home run. The Blue Jays, you know, he hit a home run on Saturday, I should say. The Blue Jays, obviously in the blowout on Friday night, were really, hitting the ball around. So, you know, all those things, they need to add up for a team like the Rays to be good. The Blue Jays offense, I think, getting back to your point about running on all cylinders, The offense, especially now with Springer back in, is deep enough that you never really have to rely on any one guy. They are going to score runs. They have a significant amount of offensive talent. They hit 3 home runs on Friday night. Vlad, George, Springer, Marcus Semien. Like, it's hard to catch the ball when it's over the fence. When you hit the ball onto the interstate, you know, Kevin Kiermaier's only got so much range. So, you know, the bullpen obviously was a big plus in April, and then has come crashing back down beyond Earth through the crust into the mantle below the Earth's surface. But the starting pitching has been really quite good most of the season, and the offense has been good. So there's just those couple things that if the Blue Jays can tighten up the defense, if that comes through an upgrade, or if that comes through just maybe, I don't know, a little bit of good luck, a couple of good bounces, a couple of guys playing well. And then the bullpen, if the Blue Jays can kind of tie up those loose ends, then yeah, that looks like a team that would be firing on all cylinders, and B is a pretty fearsome team that nobody, I don't think, in the American League is really going to want to face. I mean, the Yankees are right now a mess. The Red Sox are, they're still in first place. They're still doing their thing, but they're not, they haven't run away to hide. They won a big 1-0 against Oakland today. That's a, you know, you don't, I can't, maybe the Blue Jays aren't the team you expect to ever win a game 1-0 at this point. But yeah, there's a lot to be, yeah, as evidenced by these all-star selections and as evidenced by the number of runs scored versus the number of runs allowed. There's a lot to get behind on this Blue Jays team. But to agree with you in a long-winded way, there's still room to improve. There's still room that they can get better. And they can be among the better teams in baseball right now.
Yeah, one thing to build off what you were saying or add another point, the Blue Jays' improvement of the bullpen, early signs of Adam Simber were really good. He came out, he's had, I think, at least 3 outings so far for the Blue Jays, and I don't think he's been scored on. He looks like a really nice pickup. He really looks like he fits in that, I don't know, like kind of almost like first or second man out of the bullpen kind of role. Like, I think he can come on with the men on because he's really good at getting ground balls. And so he's a guy that you could call upon to get a double play ball or get, you know, one final out. Then he can come back out. I think he got 4 outs. But he's also a guy that can come in clean inning, pitch the 7th. So he's actually like, the Blue Jays still probably need another, I would say, best case 2 more bullpen arms that are both high leverage guys that can really get guys out, guys that you can trust in the 8th and 9th inning. But having a guy like Adam Simber just gives Charlie another option earlier on in the game so that you're not like really having to call on your best guy or really just having like 2 guys to go from like Meza. can we get 6 outs from Meza and Romano every single time or whoever it may be. So that so far looks like a trade that's worked out, but obviously there's still work to be done, with the bullpen. And you mentioned starting's been pretty good, and I don't know if I should go down this road again, but I was texting with a friend, friend of the podcast, Josh Goldberg, host of Jays Talk, and him and I were texting back and forth. Like, how would we grade the Blue Jays first half? I'm not sure if he put out this question to his listeners or whatever the other day. And I know early on, what was it that I got in trouble for grading the off season or whatever I did. And everyone got mad at me because I gave them a B and not a C or something like that. So I don't know if I want to start that sort of, start this discourse again about grades and, you know, go back to like my childhood and all that.
Oh, right. We were talking about the bell curve. You were like, yeah, B is like, fine. And you were like, B is like a fail.
Yeah.
Might as well burn.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. But I don't know if you wanted to say like, where you think this half season is, like, I think you'd probably rate them a overall B minus. be? Like, is it, I don't know. They're not winning the division, but they're not too far behind. They've had to battle a lot of injuries. I think you could clearly say the offense has been like, give them a high grade, whether it's an A or an A minus, whatever. And then I think the bullpen's probably been low end if you want to give them a D or something like that. And then I think starting pitching's probably been somewhere between like a B or high C, C plus. I don't know. What does that kind of average out to? Probably around a B. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. You've blown up my preconceived notions on what a grade should be.
Well, just consider like, I don't know, consider whatever you think a B is.
Well, I mean, like what I guess relative to expectations, you know, the question coming into the season that people were asking, and, you know, I know Mike Petrelio, who we had on our show, on this show before, was like asking, you know, before the season and making observations like, man, the Blue Jays have a really great offense, but like, who's going to pitch for them was the sort of the question. And in terms of, you know, wins above replacement, if you look at the entire staff, they rank 26th in baseball with a collective 4 wins above replacement. You know, that's by Fangraphs, right? Which doesn't rate Robbie Ray in particular, particularly well. Their starting rotation by Fangraphs wins above replacement ranks 25th. Right. So like, you know, you've Hyunjin Ryu, this is something we haven't really talked about. It's like Hyunjin Ryu has had a bit of a rough go here in the last, I guess, 6 times out. He has not quite been himself. His ERA is, you know, if that's your bag, it's still pretty good. He's just under a win. Russ Stripling is again, a guy who's pitched really, really well, of late. But is not like the kind of FIP darling, I guess we could say. But again, if you look at the Blue Jays through a bit of a different lens, you've got Robbie Ray's been really good, Hyunjin Ryu's been really good, Manoah's been good, and Stripling's been pretty good as well. Steven Matz is a little bit, you know, hit or miss, and then you've got just a bunch of guys who have taken starts with the Blue Jays and have either been ineffective or like, you know, David Phelps started a game for the Blue Jays, Travis Bergen started a game for the Blue Jays, so. In terms of like the top, you know, what the top 4 or 5 guys, you can't really complain too loudly about what they've given you. Again, Alek Manoah had a great start on Friday. That's been a huge boon to the Blue Jays. He's pitched really, really well. Looking like, you know, he's had his moments where he hasn't pitched quite so well. And obviously the game where he hilariously got thrown out early on where he was struggling badly. But like, you know, you would love to see a bit more from Ryu, but you can't complain about what you're getting from Robbie Ray. You can't complain about what you've been getting from Ross Stripling since he sort of overhauled his mechanics on the fly. And Steven Matz, again, you didn't really give up anything to get Steven Matz. And your fifth starter is going to be a fifth starter. And if that's Matz, again, you got to be fine with that. So I would say that in some ways they might have pitched even a little bit beyond expectations, the starters in particular. And I think that the relievers have pitched below expectations, even though the expectations were pretty low. You know, you can get excited about Kirby Yates, like when you and I were sitting here in February and whatever, and trying to think about what's going to happen. But, you know, as you mentioned, and we joked about Craig Kimbrell off the top of the show, and they need some more, you know, high leverage or big kind of high impact arms. It'll be interesting to see when guys start to come back. Right. When we were starting to see Ryan Baraki was throwing, and is getting closer to getting back. Julian Merriweather is throwing, not quite into simulated games and stuff, but is maybe on track for like an end of July. Here we are in the beginning of July, on track for a return. So, who of those guys you can count on? Like Ryan Baraki's kind of maybe a little worrisome in terms of his splits and someone you might be a little wary of sending out there against some of the best right-handed bats around. But now you've got Adam Simber, who's the opposite, right? Adam Simber is the guy that's going to go up there and kill right-handed hitters. So if you're facing the Yankees in a late season game and you got to get through Judge and you got to get through Stanton and you got to get through Gary Sanchez or DJ LeMahieu, you know, you've got options that don't include Ryan Baraki. And then you can also go to, you know, any other number of guys, Julian Merriweather, the great wild card. Right. God only knows. You can't count on him, but he looked so out of control good at the beginning of the season. Like, I'm as good as anyone, as good as you can pitch, right? That's how well Julian Merriweather pitched at in those first two outings. Three, I guess he pitch four times? Yeah. But like the myth, the legend of those four outings. So, yeah. You know, in terms of grades, you could say I would give the starting pitchers, again, relative to expectations. You know, I don't know who I was talking about. It might've been my brother-in-law this past week about the kind of Roger Ebert school of film criticism, where like, what's a film trying to be, and does it achieve that? So you don't want to compare, you know, Fast and the Furious 9 to Schindler's List. They are out trying to achieve different things. Did Fast and the Furious achieve what it's trying to achieve? From what I understand, yes, I like those movies aren't for me, but like, it's not fair to, it's, you know, you want to make sure you're making apples to apples comparisons. Is this a genre film done well? What about it is good? What did I watch the other day? Last night I watched No Sudden Move, that Steven Soderbergh movie that was like good at what it was trying to be. Not the best movie of all time, but an effective use of 2 hours. The Blue Jays starting rotation has, I think, exceeded expectations and therefore deserves a decent grade. The bullpen somehow still underperformed relative to very low expectations and deserves a failing grade. So a C or a C minus, like just.
I gave them a D.
Bury them in the dirt.
They don't get an F because they had a good April, I would say.
D is bad though. D is a fail.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm giving them a D, but I'm saying they could be even if they were. If they had a bad April as well, then they would be an F.
Or if they didn't have Jordan Romano, they would be an F. They would be like a C in hell.
Speaking of all-star snubs, Jordan Romano, I think, had a good chance. But they just, as a reliever on a team that doesn't have a very good bullpen, and also to the point that we've been talking about the Blue Jays position players were going to steal the show always, but Jordan Romano is having a really nice season by some statistics. And I think whatever day it was that he allowed a couple runs, it was like the first runs he'd allowed since like the middle of May or something like that. And so, yeah, he's having a good year as well. But they don't typically take a ton of relievers to the All-Star game. It's usually like just a few. And mm-hmm. There was obviously going to be guys ahead of him like Hendricks and Matt Barnes and maybe Ryan Priestley or whoever else is on the All-Star team.
Yeah, which I don't think is the worst thing. I don't think it's the worst thing to not reward starting pitchers. I mean, maybe it's a bit of an antiquated notion, but it's the All-Star game. It's an antiquated thing as it is. But yeah, Jordan Romano has pitched really, really well. He's the one who's outpaced expectations, and that he gave up those two runs. Excuse me, Saturday afternoon, I guess, and that was the first time all year he's given up more than one run. And you are right. He hadn't given up any runs since May 16th. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I don't know if maybe we should circle back just to Robbie Ray for a second, just because I think at the midway point of the season, we can really say that this is the new Robbie Ray. I mean, I think that there was sort of parts of the season where maybe people were waiting. You're maybe waiting to see is that sort of like shaky command Robbie Ray going to emerge at any point? But really, like, you look at his numbers and like you look at just the number of strikes he's throwing. I think it's like he's throwing more strikes this year than he ever has. He's throwing more first strikes than he ever has. I think there was like, I don't remember exactly, but I think for the month of June, he potentially had fewer walks than Ryu or something like that. There's been portions of the year where like, yeah, he's had fewer walks than Ryu and obviously like triple the strikeouts because he's striking out a ton of guys. I think it was like last start where he had 10 strikeouts or at least 10 strikeouts. And it was something like he tied, most strikeouts in the first 15 games of a season for a starter, tied with Roger Clemens for, I think it was like 113 strikeouts in the first 15 games. So like with Robbie Ray, like it's almost like the Blue Jays were getting the best of Robbie Ray right now, because even when he's had his shaky command struggles over the years, he was always able to blow by some guys, right? He could always kind of rack up the strikeouts. The problem with Robbie Ray is that he would also collect a lot of walks along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Blue Jays right now are kind of getting the ideal Robbie Ray in the sense that he's throwing a lot of strikes. He's getting a lot of strikeouts. He's throwing the ball actually harder than I think he's ever thrown the ball. And he's not walking, guys. And so that is a great combination. If you were trying to like write out a script of like, what would be the ideal Robbie Ray? I mean, this is kind of it. Like, and I guess the one sort of, knock on his season is the home runs. He's allowed, I haven't checked today, but I think potentially he's allowed, the most home runs in the American League. A lot of those home runs have been solo home runs, like, cause he's not necessarily like loading the bases with walks or whatever. Today's home run that he gave up was solo, right? Because Jansen, luckily, threw the guy out, I think a batter before, whatever it was. And so it was a solo home run by, Wander Franco, I think. And, yeah, so, and Robbie even said to us today after talking to us after the game, like he kind of was almost like confused or like, kind of couldn't really figure out like the home run thing that he's struggling with this year. I mean, I think a one easy solution or not solution, sorry, one easy explanation is just he's throwing a lot of strikes. And when you throw a lot of strikes, you miss your spot by a little bit and it's in the zone and the guy puts a good swing on it and you're going to give up a solo home run. And I think if guys run into a few over against Robbie Ray every now and then, but those are the only damage he gives up. I mean, I don't know exactly what all his starts have been, but there really hasn't been a game. There's only been a handful of games where he's given up like four earned runs or whatever it is. I mean, most of his starts have been like three earned runs or less.
No, the lack of you know, 2 and 3 run home runs is so huge for him, and it's huge for anybody. There's nothing wrong. You know, there's never a bad time. There's never a good time to give up a 3-run home run. And that's kind of what got him a little bit his last time out when he pitched against Seattle, where he did give up that 3-run home run to Ty France, which was like a bit of an anomaly in that he hasn't had that, those kinds of outings specifically where he gets himself into a little bit of trouble and then gets got, you know, with a home run. But he has given up 20 home runs, which leads the American League. I'm not sure about the National League. I'm sure it's probably pretty close, but You can't complain. Again, you would so much rather him be wild, not wild in the zone, but if he's going to miss, he misses over the heart of the plate a little bit or gets hit rather than have him searching for the zone all the time and having him walking the ballpark and running up a pitch count. There was some talk about that sixth inning, when he went out. Well, that was the last game, where maybe they could have, you know, if there was more confidence in the bullpen, you know, God only knows. Was that even today? I don't remember when I was seeing that.
It was today. So he got in a little bit of trouble in the sixth inning, but then he came back out for the seventh. I think it was the Rays seventh, eighth, and ninth hitter for the seventh, which I think he was hovering around like the 90-ish pitch mark. So I imagine the Blue Jays' plan would have been if he had gotten into trouble with like the seventh or eighth guy, they probably would have pulled him and brought in the bullpen. But I think he got out of it quickly and he retired the side or whatever it is. But that probably was the thinking. It was like the seventh, eighth, and ninth hitter. But to your point that you were probably getting to and I interrupted, I think the confidence in the bullpen plays into that. And at that point, it was still a fairly close game because it was Dolis where it kind of broke open.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
given what we talked about last week when we talked about trades and trade targets and all that sort of stuff, you are not maybe in favor. You would not be in favor of trading Robbie Ray at the trade deadline for the Blue Jays. We are aligned, or like, I mean, we've been acting under the assumption the Blue Jays are going to look to add to their team.
Yes,
in an attempt to make a very legitimate postseason run, as opposed to doing the opposite. And the Blue Jays going full villain, full heel, and trading Robbie Ray and trading Marcus Semien and just being like, it's not our year.
They Blue Jays will do trades similar to what they've already done. So I would like, they traded Joe Panik. He was a position player for them. I mean, utility guy. So I don't think they're opposed to like not trading anyone from their 26 man roster. If it's kind of on the margins, like I know Ross Atkins has talked in the past before of like how teams can kind of get creative with like maybe bullpen guys, and you can trade from your bullpen to bring in more bullpen guys, you know, trade guys with control for guys with less control or whatever it is. So like those trades, I don't know who has value in the Blue Jays bullpen. There's not very many, and those guys, they wouldn't want to be trading their best guy, their two best guys or whoever it is, three best guys if you include Simber. To your point about Robbie Ray, I mean, like, that would be so demoralizing for the Blue Jays if they were to, like, move Robbie Ray. Like, they would have to go, like, oh, and they would have to not win a game from here until July 30th for them to move anyone that's, like, Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien or anyone else that was, like, you know, on a one-year deal and is having a good year.
Speaking of move, might Caitlin, the Blue Jays, be on the move here in July back to Toronto to play baseball games in front of appreciative Canadians? I guess there was some news today that TFC is making strides to play games. The next game, I believe, at home at BMO Field. God only knows where they've been playing. They've been stinking it up. They just fired their coach.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
They have moved away from an attacking style of football and made everybody mad. I haven't been following TFC. I assume I have operated in a constant state of like TFC is always bad, even though they aren't. They were like good last year. They won.
they were good for a long time.
Yeah. But like, I just remember the bad old days. I remember them so vividly, and it was great. It was great sport to make fun of TFC. But nonetheless, they're coming back. And now there's been talk that the Blue Jays might be coming back, or there was a rumor, I don't know if there's any validity to it, that they could be looking to come back as soon as July the 30th. Does that sound crazy?
Yeah, so the TFC deal is interesting. So I don't know the soccer schedule is very much because I don't follow it, but I guess they don't play for a while. So they're coming back to Toronto to train for a little bit. I think they play a game and they're coming back or something like that. And then they don't play for like 2 weeks till that July 17th day. And so I think the hope is that they can play that game here, but they haven't got approval to play that game here yet. They've just got approval to like come back. I also understand that I think I read, on Canadian Press or Sportsnet Shy Story, and also had Canadian Press portions in it or whatever. Anyway, TFC were fully vaccinated, or almost all the players are vaccinated. So that also like makes them coming in easier, because obviously Canada is getting to a point now. I think like as of midnight tonight, fully vaxxed Canadians can come in, can go in and out, and they won't have to quarantine. And certainly seems like we're heading to a place where we're going to see more increased travel once the border opens up, whatever that may be. But back to your point about the Blue Jays, I think that based on, you know, what I've heard and based on the reporting that I saw from Shai Davidi, that the Blue Jays have kind of put an application in to the various levels of government to kind of get that process going, and the municipal and the provincial government have given their okay. And if you remember last year, this happened sort of similarly, where the provincial and the municipal government gave their okay, and then it really was ultimately up to the federal government. So while it's good signs to hear you're getting approvals from different levels, it kind of ultimately rests with the federal government. But yeah, that July 30th homestand, which I think it kicks off a fairly long homestand, probably 10 games, because I think 10 games is their longest homestand this year. So whether they're going to come back on like that exact day or just like in during that homestand, it's obviously not a huge drive to get over to Buffalo. So I think they could do it between series if they had to, but I don't know. But that's obviously a target date, end of July. And then the secondary backup date would be, I think, August 20th. There's another homestand, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I should point out, or I think I should say that I think these are targets because this is not something the Blue Jays fans would want to hear necessarily. But I think once you get into September, it will be harder to convince not just the players, but also their families who have kind of like made Buffalo home for the last couple months to then mm-hmm. move to Toronto for potentially like 2 weeks or whatever. I don't know. I think they only have like a 2 week homestand or however it might be in September. So that becomes harder to convince. Do I think like in a perfect ideal world, if they could just kind of transport themselves to Toronto and play in front of their fans, they would do that. But just like the logistical stuff that goes along with the move and the families and moving cars and moving a lot of stuff, equipment, everything, it's a lot to ask. So I think you really got to circle that end of July, middle of August as the ideal dates, because once you get beyond that, it becomes a little bit difficult. You kind of have to think, is there really a point? Is this more trouble than it's worth? Even though I think ultimately, like, it would be nice to have them here, but there's other considerations.
For sure. And your point is a good one. When you look at September, they don't have anything more than two. They have two, like, six game sets at home in September, as well as starting the month. So Labor Day, I guess Labor Day, would be at home. The date that folks have been bandying about, that Friday, the July 30th, that is, you know, as you said, their longest kind of 10 day, home game before they go out, west, right? They are home on July or August the 8th, and then they have an off day before they play in LA or in Anaheim against, Shohei Ohtani and presumably Mike Trout and the Angels, before coming back for another, like, you know, seven games here and then six games here. So kind of getting those two kind of that, but that one long series is the one that makes that, you know, that is a good and fair target. You wonder, you know, if they would be able to kind of pull up stake and move home, you know, in the preceding trip that includes a series against the Mets and then four games in Boston. Is that enough time to get the Blue Jays settled and done and dusted back in Toronto? Remains to be seen. It's encouraging for fans no matter what. But I think that human aspect is important to talk about. And while those of us who may live or have spent time in Toronto would not trade Toronto for Buffalo, I would rather live in Toronto than Buffalo. The ability to be unsettled or to be kind of thrown out on your ear and to be living out of a suitcase to the nth degree. I mean, a lot of these players, they live in Toronto, just during the season and they go back to their homes wherever they are in the United States or the Dominican Republic or further afield. Obviously, Hyunjin Ryu goes back to South Korea, but it's still that extra level of annoyance and that extra amount of travel and plus coming in and having to get negative tests. Even if they are fully vaccinated, they have to show a negative test on their way in. But I know we saw Mike Wilner of the Star was in Buffalo covering the team. He's in a slightly unique situation, as he revealed on Twitter that he is technically a dual citizen. So he has a little bit of an easier time getting in and back and over the border. But yeah, if nothing else, it's something to be excited about. The prospect of seeing Blue Jays baseball in Toronto with hopefully people, you sitting in your seat in the press box and me, well, probably, I probably won't be there. I'd probably be at home, but somebody would go. People listening to this would be there with bells on, cheering, carrying on, having a great time. It's exciting, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's exciting. I miss my press box chair. In my view, I actually had my spot in the press box because they moved the press box. I'm not sure if you were there once after they moved it or not, if you'd been there when they moved it to left field. But my seat in the press box looks right down into the bullpen, so I could see the Toronto bullpen getting ready. So that would be prime real estate right now. See which arm is getting sent out there.
There's no cheering in the press box, but there's definitely booing. Somebody like Rafael Dolis gets up and just boo! Hurry the fuck up! Like you're yelling from the press box. I sat in that when it was the auxiliary press box.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In the olden times, that was the Argos press box.
Yeah.
And then it was like overflow press. So when I went to Masahiro Tanaka's first start as a Yankee, that's how old I am and how when I was like had a daily season's pass and would show up whenever I could. But I got stuck out there and I watched Masahiro Tanaka's start from that auxiliary press box. And then when was the last time I was down there? But probably it was 2018, I guess, was the last time that I went and like covered a game. I interviewed John Axford. Does that make sense? Does that line up?
Yeah, that was 2018. I do remember you came. I have a memory of you coming because you did a story on Sungwon Oh, and that was 2018.
I wanted to do a story on Sungwon Oh. I talked to him and I wanted him to. I was asking him about taking people out for Korean food and I talked with him and I forget the name of the translator interpreter. I talked to Sungwon Oh a little bit. I got to showcase my very rusty and very limited Korean to his, bemusement. But, that team, that bullpen was weird, right? It had Axford and Oh, who was really good. And then Tyler Clippard back in the day. Mm-hmm. Gallery.
I think Aaron Loop was still in that bullpen then.
He was like the old man, right? He was the Aaron Loop's still around. How wild is that?
He's not old though. Aaron Loop is like 32.
That's true. But he's a left-handed reliever, so he's like born old. like the former and he played for the Rays, right? Which like ages anyone. That puts miles on the odometer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's having a good year with the Mets, I think.
Yeah, I think he is. Ryan Tepera was on that team.
Yeah.
Biagini, Giles. Tim Mesa was around then. Bless Tim Mesa. Yeah.
That was the season that he got injured, right? No, that was 2019. Sorry.
Josh Donaldson was still there when I was there that day. Josh Donaldson and Curtis Granderson was there. They were talking about Babe Ruth or something. There was some weird baseball history thing that they were discussing like across the clubhouse. And I tried not to be involved. Luke Maley back in the big leagues.
Is he?
Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah. They're having a really good stretch right here. They won like 10 or 11 in a row.
That makes it hard for the Blue Jays to trade for Josh Hader, doesn't it? Which was under plan, but he's got canceled. But hold on. No, never mind.
What are we even talking about? I don't even know.
We're talking about the 2018 Blue Jays and Luke Maley, who plays for Milwaukee, and future Blue Jay Josh Hader, which is not going to come to pass. But nonetheless. And the only other thing I was going to mention, because I said the word prospect, the prospect of watching baseball, then I was going to make a point to say something about, speaking of the All-Star break, Austin Martin will be playing in the Futures game.
Yeah.
He'll be playing in the Futures game because Gabriel Moreno is injured.
Yes.
Does he have a fractured wrist? Is that what I saw?
No, a fractured thumb.
Fractured thumb.
Yeah, a ball.
Can't win for losing.
He got hit by pitch in the thumb, so he'll be out a few weeks, which is unfortunate because he was having a great season.
It is unfortunate. He is having a great season, but hopefully he'll be back. Hopefully he will heal up and still have the power, which sometimes those hand injuries can sap the power for little bits of time for some guys. But yeah, that's it. That's it. It's a busy show. We just talked all about a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
We were like, we'll do a quick one. Shout out to producer Cam, who is, of course, celebrating the 4th of July here while you and I speak. I'm sure he's doing things with hot dogs and fireworks and having a bit of a different time than we did this past week. I hope everyone was able to have a contemplative and maybe or hopefully a very different Canada Day than the ones that have come before it. So hopefully there was you and anyone who you were listening to or talking to around Canada, were able to have some productive or interesting conversations, unlike those that you may have had in previous years. I think that seems to be in the experience of most people that I've come across very different kind of canon today, which is a good step in the right direction, but still so much left to do. Caitlin, what do you got for the people this weekend? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tease?
I'm working on a few things in anticipation for the draft, which is coming up next week, I think. And so I'll have some stuff on that. And so look for that kind of stuff. I don't know. I got my second vaccine dose today on Sunday. So I'm not sure how I'm going to be feeling tomorrow. So I'm kind of keeping my schedule a little bit open early part of the week because I'm not sure how much work I'll be able to get done tomorrow. I'm not sure how I'm going to respond to the second dose. So wait and see. But I'll have something up tomorrow that I finished tonight on Sunday. But I don't know how much I'm going to have on Tuesday. It really depends on how I feel on Monday.
Fingers crossed you'll feel okay. I'm coming up on 2 weeks since my second dose, and I felt fine. I was lucky, other than a sore arm. I did not have a lot of side effects or aches or pains or headaches or sickness. So glad for that, and glad that you were able to get your second dose. Now you can get out there, get in these streets, and get that microphone into someone's face and be like, "Let's talk about the Blue Jays." That's how you, I understand, is how you open most of your conversations. Like, "Let's talk about the Blue Jays." Mm-hmm. Okay, what's up? Shenjin Ryu, you run right up on him. Pew, microphone in the face. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. She loves Survivor. My name is Drew Fairservice. I do not like Survivor. But we together make this show Spin Rate, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to us. We hope that you enjoy listening to the Blue Jays this week. We will talk to you next time on Spin Rate.